it's having the, you know, being able to communicate and to talk, but sometimes it can actually be a challenge if you have people that just talk all the time, or they're the ones that control the conversation. There was a, soon after my wife and I were married, we lived in an area, and we were invited to a home for a meal that evening, and I don't think I've ever been anywhere. We looked at each other during the course of the meal sitting there, and I think everyone at the table, the mom, the dad, and there was three siblings, were all talking at the same time. And we didn't have to say anything. And we just looked at each other, and we'd smile, and it was just, you talk about a really almost like Tigger on steroids and expressive. It was. And it's a really a fine family. We love them dearly, but they're kin, and there's a dominant personality in both the husband and the wife, which obviously the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree, so in the siblings as well. And so there was just, it just had momentum. And it's a good thing. It's just that sometimes a person can sit there and wonder, you know what, maybe we could just slip out and they'll never even miss us. They never knew, no, we were not even here, and we're the guest. The definition of expressiveness is to be able to communicate, to express oneself, to articulate. And that's a good quality, to be able to share what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and to be able to express it in a way that's clear, that is understood. But like I said, if it is coupled with, or if it is done in such a way to where another person isn't regarded or respected, it can cause damage. It can cause a person to feel like they have no value, or you're really not interested in anything that they would have to say. And so they can shut down or pull back. Expressiveness is not a weakness, it's a strength. But it can damage if we overrun another person who cannot express himself, or we combine it with other pressures such as anger, expectations, self-focus, and or emotional detachment, or being without love. So it's like words can be very, very effective. Really, words are a way we communicate. And being able to say words or to say things in such a way that it can be understood and that can meet the mark is very powerful. But if a person if they feel a detachment or no love or no real, nothing genuine behind it, it's just flattery or words that are hollow, they actually can be damaging. As a matter of fact, I'd rather not hear it than to hear you say it and then to have to deal with the feeling, looking at you, feeling like you really don't mean it. Then it becomes hurtful, becomes more of a damaging thing. Here are some words to describe expressive. A person couldn't respond, or their desires are rejected, they're excluded, disregarded, inferior, insignificant, invalidated, not listened to, opinions not valued, they become shut down or silenced or suppressed, unable to speak, unimportant, or unresponsive. And I'm just going to kind of go through these prayers very quickly. I won't read through them. I'll just put them up there. You can read them. But if you have someone that is talking all the time and they don't give someone else a chance to express, then you have the potential to cause that person to close up or to not feel like that they want to contribute in some way. If you couple it with anger, obviously, it becomes verbal abuse. You're using words, but you're raising your voice, and if you start yelling or really going on a rant with expressing your disappointment or disapproval, and there's anger behind it, it can be very cutting. You remember the little clip that we shared and the little saying that sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, really, that's true. In many cases, I believe even our Lord was more hurt by the emotional wounds of friends, maybe even in as an example like Peter, who said, Lord, though the whole world forsake you, I'll never leave you. And what did Peter do? He left him. And I believe that cut deeper. I think that was really more of a wound and a hurt to the Lord Jesus than even the nails that were driven through his hands and the physical pain he endured and his beard being plucked out and the plowers plowing deep furrows across his back with those scourges. Words can be very devastating, and I think that's why James refers to the tongue. It's like a fire. It's a world of iniquity. It can really cause a lot of damage, and yet with the same means or the same vehicle in use, it can offer such blessing and be so uplifting when there's heart behind it. Expressive, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. Another pressure pattern is not being talked to. You remember the boy last night, he rode all the way to the store and back, and he never remembered his dad saying one word. When no one ever pays attention and never says anything to you, it can create a lot of wonder inside. Do I really matter? Am I not valuable enough for anyone to invest in or to take any time with? Not a person that is not talked to can tend to not be able to communicate. It, unable to express one's feelings, they're inhibited or unable to speak. I've had a number of people in my office, and we'll ask them a question, or we may even ask them to share their story. And they'll just sit there. So if I just sit here, if I just stood here and I didn't speak, it wouldn't be but just a few, probably a half a minute, and you would start to wonder, where do we go from here? This feels a little uncomfortable. I had a man one time in my, I had a couple actually, they were a month away from celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. And they both were in their early 70s. And the first thing that the wife said, for the last 25 years, my husband will not talk to me. He just doesn't talk. He comes in, I said, how was your day? He was good. So what happened? Oh, we just worked. And he just went and he would sit down in his chair. And she said, it drives me crazy. He won't talk to me at all. And she said, really, it's been that way practically all of our married life. He's just been this quiet person that would never talk. You know, I turned to the man and I said, why don't you tell me a little bit about your past? And I like to have a person go all the way back. And I know at 70 plus years old, that's a long way to look back and to think about your earliest memories as a child. But the guy remembered several different things. One thing he shared with me, he grew up in central Washington, and his dad was in the military, so they moved around a lot. But while they were there, he remembered him and his brother. His dad bought a .22 rifle, and his brother had no interest in guns, but he just kind of claimed that rifle, and he would go out into the desert, and he would just shoot varmints, and he'd spend time, and he just thoroughly enjoyed that. That rifle was his friend. One day, his dad and a few other guys were going to go shoot some targets, and one man didn't have a gun, so he said, I'm going to take the .22 along for this buddy of mine, and he'll have a gun, you know, we can trade around, but he can use too. So when he came back, the first thing he did is he set the gun over in the corner and said, we're getting rid of that gun. There was something about the firing pin, and every time you would pull the trigger, it would shoot a little spark out, and he said, someone's going to get hurt with that. And the boy was there, and he heard his dad say it. The mailman came walking up within 15 minutes, and dad said, hey, would you like a gun? Got one right here, and just gave it to him. That boy said, That crushed my heart. My dad never asked me anything. He never wondered, you know, how I felt about that or anything. You know what his wife said? I've been married to this guy for nearly 50 years. I've never heard that story. You know what he said? He said, when we were first married, I tried to share with my wife. I tried to be open with her. I tried to have conversation with her, but she would always criticize everything that I said. You know what I decided? I could get along a whole lot better just by being quiet. I listened to that guy for 3 hours, and I got a whole page of notes of this man's story and his past. I looked at his wife, and I said, I don't think your husband has a problem talking. I think there's something else that might be shutting him down. But he hasn't had a problem talking or sharing with me here. But it can cause a lot of damage in someone when they start feeling like that they can't express or they're not talked to, just like his wife. She needed connection. She needed to feel him close. And she needed that interaction. But the problem is, every time he tried to reach out to do it, she would always kind of just shut him off. Two causes for not being able to talk. One is it can be inherited from one or both parents. They can just be quiet by nature. And there are people that are introverted. They're just much more. We had a good friend that we became acquainted with. He was in the ministry. He was a good bit older than us. He's gone now. But he would be just as content to go out here in the woods and spend all of his time just working. And he was a very industrious man. He didn't dislike people. It's just that that's kind of where his comfort was. And you're not going to change someone if they're just quiet by nature. But sometimes there can be a tendency for someone to not feel comfortable opening up because they haven't been talked to or they've been shut down. Or there can be emotional pain in childhood. And that's kind of really what we're going to talk about in the next session, is the pain that we can experience. Damage that may cause one to stop talking is another person controlling communication in the home, a feeling of rejection or being depressed, critical and judgmental comments. That's what kind of this man shared that he felt from his wife. Expectations or dominance placed on someone and that putting pressure on them to the point where they can't talk. I remember I had an uncle one time, and he was always really very vocal and not really too concerned about who was listening or who was around. And I always just kind of feared when we went around to family gatherings because he'd put you on the spot. And I just didn't, it just made me feel a little uncomfortable when he would come up to you. But I remember a few different times he would ask me something, hey, you got a girlfriend? And then I wouldn't say anything. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? And I'm like, back off, will you? And especially at an age when I might have kind of wanted a girlfriend, but I didn't have one or something. And it was like kind of embarrassing. And I felt myself just wanting to pull back from a person like that. I've got cousins that are very expressive, and it seems to go without any kind of restraint, and it can cause a person to get quiet. If I would ask all of you, stand up and just give me about a 10-minute overview of your life history, and you stood up, and then as you began to share, if there was people that just didn't listen, or if someone challenged what you were saying, it would cause you to react in some way. Now, you might stand up to them, but you might just go quiet. You might pull back. You might just decide that I'll just quit talking. Or you might pull a switch inside or make a determination that, well, that's the last time I'll ever do that. It's not safe. Others only focusing on themselves, verbal, physical, or sexual abuse. not being understood or given the opportunity to share. I used to like, sometimes when we have our annual conference, we will get together and then we're dispersed as far as representatives into subcommittees to kind of work on various issues. And I always appreciated sitting on a subcommittee when the foreman would make the effort to go around to and make it easy for every single person to express themselves. Usually when you get into a committee, there's always usually a few people that are doing a lot of the talking, and then there's others that are not really, maybe they're just kind of reserved or they're not contributing much. But when someone just takes the effort and recognizes that and gives that opportunity, it always made me feel a whole lot more appreciative, because everyone then was getting a fair time to be able to express and to share. Pain caused by a non-expressive person being abandoned, alone, avoided, cut off, just a number of different words. And like I said, I'm going to kind of move through this. I almost decided I wasn't even going to put these on the board because of the time constraint. I try to do this within a segment of time, but oftentimes we can get bogged down, and before we know it, we're stuck here in this point, and we really want to kind of move toward getting to a place where we can find resolve for some of these things. But I do want us to understand that it's crucial to be able to identify where pain comes from and to identify when it exists in a person's heart. Because what we do, we have a diagram, and it's like we have this heart, and around it we draw a circle and we put truth, and it's like we try to apply truth to that heart. But if there are wounds or if there are issues that a person has experienced, we have a tendency to compartmentalize or close off portions of our heart. And then we're not open, or we don't feel safe, or we're not willing to share those, even with a spouse. And so really, you think about it, when you're in a marriage relationship, are you going to be satisfied if you've got a spouse that is only giving you about 65% of their heart because there's another 35% that's kind of wounded and hurt, and maybe even the spouse doesn't even see or understand and steps on at times, so you just keep that closed? I don't think anyone's going to be satisfied really with less than 100%. That's kind of what we want. We want a person's heart. Not talked to. Pleasant words are as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. A focus on self. We mentioned this last night. It's selfish, self-centered, arrogant, wrapped up in oneself. It's all about me. It's all about how I see myself. And really everything revolves around me. They only see themselves. They don't notice their spouse or others. They think about themselves. They don't consider others. Their decisions are focused on their desires, and they're looking out for number one. They're always protective. They're always defensive. They're always getting in the last word. It's like sharing with someone and saying, you know, I've really kind of been struggling lately. Maybe it's been cloudy for the last 2 weeks. Maybe that has something to do with my mood, but things are just seem like they're heavy on me right now. And then that person will respond and say, oh, you think you feel bad? Let me tell you my story. And boom, you just took everything away and drew it all back to a person will take it back to themselves. And it's like it's always about them. Now, self-focused people, it's going to affect every part of our life, our speech, our attitudes, our decisions, our priorities, our ministry, our relationship. There's one thing that I have learned, and really it was drilled into me by a peer of mine, but there's one thing about ministry that a person has to come to realize, and they have to come to realize that if they're going to be effective in ministry, and that is, this is not about me. This is all about what God is able to do. And as a vessel, as someone that is yielding and giving themselves into his hand, that he can work through, but it isn't about me or where I'm at in any part of the process. And the sooner that we can come to that point or come to that understanding, the better or the more effective we can be. Three causes of self-focus. One or both parents were self-focused. Circumstances have caused them to only consider themselves, like the guy that lost his wife. He became very self-absorbed, and it was like, why me, Lord? Why did this happen to me? Why is this all fell out the way it has, and it's caused this whole disruption in my life? Their self-focus is caused by severe pain within. And I'm just going to tell you something. I care a lot about people that are self-focused. Not in the sense that if someone is walking around and strutting and boastful and really proud of themselves and self-promoting themselves, but more in the sense that there's wounds that have hurt them down inside. And there's probably one of the things that I get excited about is when I see someone who is depressed and in a state of feeling like that all the world, they're carrying the weight of all the world on their shoulders, and you see them get free. It's a tremendous, it just brings a tremendous joy inside to see them open up. And what really is kind of validating to that is when they have a spouse that is able to witness something, and it's kind of like, I have a new husband, or I have a new wife. And it's just so exciting to be able to see that right in front of your eyes, and you wonder, what in the world happened here? But it's just something that happened within, and they were able to step beyond themselves, and then they're able to see out, and there's so much more to see when we can focus beyond our own limited perspective and we're just looking at me. Two types of self-focus, and self-focus is really nothing short of pride. It really affects all of us. We all deal with it in some way or another. There's the obvious pride, and I mentioned how that if someone is very boastful and pompous in their action, obvious pride would be a statement like this: boy, I'm glad you folks invited me over here because I'm the best speaker there is, and you're just not going to find anyone that could understand this kind of stuff better than me. I think if I made a statement like that, you're probably out of here. You're going to write, you may still sit here, but you're going to write me off. You're going to say, yeah, right, we'll see about that. That's obvious pride, and we all can identify that. Someone is self-promoting, and pride is nothing short of focusing on ourselves. It's the me mentality. But another form of pride is the hidden type, or the hidden form. And it comes along in a more subtle way, and it would be described more in a statement if I would say, you know, I've been doing this counseling ministry for a number of years now, and not one person has ever told me thank you. Now, we don't tend to think of that as being a pride statement, but it's nothing short of me being very grieved and disappointed that no one is paying attention to me. And really, anything short of us really acknowledging and accepting what God is saying, it's like I'm focusing on the pain of not being noticed. But I'm not buying in, or I'm not accepting that God is there and he sees me, that he accepts me, he recognizes me. Pain words associated with self-focus: deprived, disregarded, excluded, invalidated, left out. Opinions not valued, overlooked, unimportant, unnoticed. And I'm just going to, like I said, I'm just going to move through this and move on to the other one. Focus on self. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Anger. Anger is to lose control, wrath, rage, to become furious or inflamed, displeased, or resentful. Anger has, it's volatile. I've heard someone say one time, anger, uncontrolled anger, anger that just flashes or that just comes in spontaneous moments. It's kind of like living, building your house and living beside a volcano. You never know when it's going to erupt. And so you're living in the fear all the time that the potential is there, but you never know when it's going to happen. And it keeps everyone on pins and needles, wondering. Anger could be caused by parents, a parent or parents, siblings were angry, abuse from one's past, if others were angry with them, unfulfilled expectations, past circumstances. We had a young man one time when he was about 12 years old. He was helping his dad, and they were working on a piece of equipment in the field that had broken down. And they were up on top of this machine, and I'm not sure, it might have been a corn picker, or I can't exactly remember the implement. But the dad asked the son to get him a wrench. And he brought him a wrench, or he reached and he got him a wrench. And his dad was bent over down in the machine, and he handed the wrench to him, and it was the wrong size. And the boy shared that his dad got so angry that he just turned around and he hit the boy and he fell off onto the field, onto the ground, into the dirt. And he remembered his dad saying, I ought to know better than to send a kid out to do a man's job. And all that boy could remember, as a matter of fact, for the next 2 years of his life, he had very few memories of growing up. He was 12 until after he was like 14 and a half to 15, he really just didn't remember a whole lot. He said, I remember getting up, though, that day in that field, and I ran. I ran as hard and as fast as I could. And he said, I guess I must have went home, or I ended up at home. But he said, everything just fogged up and completely checked out with me. And I didn't remember anything. Anger can be so destructive. And we all have challenges with it. I know there's times where I've kind of lost my cool even with our children when they were younger and I was disciplining them. But you know what I really was kind of interesting to me? Is that when we would go to them and we would try to make an apology, it would always be, their response would be, oh, Dad, that's okay. But it was kind of like it took me and being the one in authority, the one up on the upper tier to take the initiative to make this right. And it kind of cleaned it all up. But anger can be so destructive. I know there's people today that have been wounded by someone being angry and then seeing them become violent. And as they seen that in their childhood, that they could be sitting right here in this room and we could even be maybe even having a discussion concerning whether we're going to paint the church or not. And then someone gets up and in a very harsh or angry tone and the discussion turns heated can be taken right back to some of those same feelings. And they start getting quivery inside. And all shaky because they were scared, they were frightened as a child. You just don't peel those things away and discard them. We tend to stuff them. We tend to push them down and maybe act as though they're not there, but yet they're there. I always say when pain is buried, it's buried alive. And so when something comes along and it gets close to the pain, it has a tendency to resurrect. And sometimes it's kind of like, whoa, where did that come from? Anger causes feelings of rejection, becomes angry at others and themselves, causes depression, causes anxiety, causes one to withdraw, causes them to stop talking, causes them to shut down emotionally, causes them to disassociate. That's what this boy did. When you disassociate, you blank off, and you tend to forget things that happen. You don't really even remember details. because everything just kind of went fuzzy. Anger just has a very powerful force and way of doing that. Afraid, angry, bitter, confused, crushed, cornered, defenseless, fearful, hated, helpless, hurt, resentful, revenge, scared, unsafe, wounded, words that are associated with someone that has been in the presence of a person being angry. Anger. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. That's the instruction. Critical and judgmental. Adverse comments, fault-finding, to disapprove, to condemn, cutting, biting words. And sometimes we can do that. You know, I've had people, it's amazing how many times I've had someone sit in my office, and they sit there and they tell me their story, and then they say, you know what? I never want to be like my mother, or I never want to be like my father. And I sit there and I listen to their story. I look at where they're at, and what's kind of interesting is that you can even see it. You know what? What you describe, you're becoming just like that person. And I think some of it's because it's our nature. Some of it is gleaned. We learn behavior. Some of it is something that we pick up along the way. But I've had mothers before say that, you know, they never wanted to raise their voice to their children because their mother used to yell at them to get the bedroom cleaned up and to do work, she would raise her voice and she despised it. And they found themselves raising their voice right at their children and hating themselves or being so grieved with themselves inside because here they are doing something that they never wanted to do. And they can become critical and judgmental. Causes of being critical and judgmental is parents, siblings were critical, circumstances in one's past, if others were critical of them, if others rejected them. I'll never forget a statement someone just mentioned a few months ago, and they said, you know what I remember the most, probably the crowning statement that I remember about growing up and being at home? You'll never amount to nothing more than a hill of beans. And that's sad. And maybe it was just said somewhat in a way of, hey, you're going to have to change, pick it up. And maybe it was just the only way they knew. Now, I'm going to put a disclaimer in here. I'm going to offer something to anyone. And I believe even parents, our parents, they didn't do it just right. As a matter of fact, I don't believe anyone can do it just right. We're all going to mess up. We're all going to make mistakes. And this isn't about indicting someone or finding fault and pointing out all the flaws in someone else. This is about understanding what has happened and what it has caused in our own heart and seeking a way to resolve that. I don't believe there's any call, really, away from the scriptural injunction that we're to honor our parents, our father and mother, and those that are in our past, really, no matter whatever they've done. I know sometimes there's been some pretty extreme cases. In the next little session here, I'm going to show you a video clip, and it's an extreme case of abuse. And it can have a tremendous, and the reason I want to show it is because it really emphatically gives you a graphic view of what pain can do in the life of a person and how it can adjust or cause their behavior to be different. But if someone is always criticized, you're never going to amount to anything. What's that going to tell them? You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe I should just quit trying. I think I'll just go hang out here at the corner. And looks like those guys are having fun. And you have a lot of people. You have a lot of homeless people walking the streets of Missoula. You have a lot of kids over there that are doing drugs, and they come into the hospital because they're nearly dehydrated or they're ODing in some way. And it's all because they're trying to escape. They're escaping something. You know what? Somewhere down inside of every individual, there's a little boy and a little girl. When I see these little children, It really, that's what Jesus calls us to. He says, except you be converted and become like these little children, really innocent, kind of trusting, and just having a confident belief that someone is going to be there to care for them. They all started out that way. They didn't all have the same treatment. Can cause feelings of being devalued, depression, anxiety, cause one to withdraw, cause them to stop talking, cause them to pull their heart away, and cause them to disassociate. They can feel accused, everything's all my fault, feel defeated, failure, hated, not good enough, put down, can't do anything right, ridiculed, condemned, conspired against, and stepped on. So I'm going to move over to this next session here. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. In other words, be slow with your criticism. Maybe until at least you take some time to try and understand what that person might be experiencing or what they've went through. When you hear their story, you might look at them differently. I have to wonder if Jesus really doesn't look at all of us just a little differently than what we realize. And I'm grateful that he does see us through eyes of compassion. You know, one time he looked out over the multitude, I think it was in Matthew 9, and he was moved with compassion. And the reason he was moved is because he's seen them as sheep that had no shepherd. They were just wandering aimlessly. And he knew that they had a need, and it made him feel a warmth flow or come up inside of him toward those individuals. So evaluating the damage from pressure patterns, have we been damaged emotionally? Has our spouse been damaged? Have we damaged our spouse? Have we damaged our children? Have we damaged others? It's like taking a check. We have a little sheet sometimes we'll have people just fill out and check and give us a 0 to 10, 10 being the extreme, the highest pain, and we'll just have them go through, is any of this been something that affected you? And just be honest with it. So you identify how a person was damaged. You seek to understand how they reacted. You care about their pain. You lead them to resolve the pain through prayer. And you make a safe place so their pain can heal. That's basically the core approach that we take in this whole model that we're approaching. Jesus, this little picture, we have a picture like this hanging in our office, and it's amazing to me. When we lead a person in a prayer, sometimes we'll ask, Jesus, do you love me? How much do you love me? Can you show me how much you love me? Or would you just communicate that with me? And I've had a number of times where there's been someone will say, they'll just point, and they're bowing their head, their eyes are closed, but you know what come to me is Jesus is just kind of reminding me of that picture right there on the wall, that he loves me just like that. He wants to take me up in his own arms, that he cares enough about me, that he sees where I'm at, and he wants to hold me. I'm going to move to this next session. We're just going to move right into that. And this is more of the pain side of conflict.